Hello, I'm Joan. I'm a Canadian family physician who also works as a restorative medical educator, facilitator, and coach. I create spaces that rehumanize the work of healthcare. I'm creating this podcast to remind myself, as well as anyone else working in a helping profession, that when you are working and caring for your human patients, you are the other human in the room. Hello there, healthcare humans. Welcome back to yet another episode of The Other Human in the Room. Thank you so much for continuing to listen if this is not your first episode. And if this is your very first episode, welcome. I'm so happy that you're here. So today, I want to talk about something that I've come to realize actually haunts more people than I realized. And yet, almost nobody is talking about. So it's time to actually talk about this thing, which is our collective fear of forgetting things. Working in healthcare in particular, though I know this extends beyond healthcare because I'll have, you know, patients come in and they're like, do I have dementia? Ah, I'm forgetting things. So like, I know we have this fear kind of globally of becoming more forgetful for understandable reasons, especially because we see that like dementia exists and that sort of thing. But it beyond that, even if we're not like, oh my gosh, I'm becoming more forgetful, there is this real, like I can recall and sometimes still literally have rise up in me this really intense and unsettled feeling that comes up if I think I've forgotten something important. Like it really feels like the floor has dropped out from under me. Like I think of recent examples, some of which I've even shared on the podcast, of like someone, like a colleague sharing what, like a casual thing they're saying, like statement of fact about, you know, an approach to a certain condition, or like saying something as a fact about how a condition works. And I'm over here being like, I swear I remember and learned the opposite, or like something completely different. And I've had the experience, like I remember mislearning and then for a couple of years misremembering, therefore, flu shot protocols for like the fact that when babies or young kiddos get their flu shot for the first time and they need to get a booster that first year and what it means in subsequent years. I misremembered it and even actually like taught it to one of my nurses. And so then she was the one that came to me and be like, are you sure? And then I was like, oh my gosh, I went back and read the guideline and I understood why I had read it one way. And then talking with a colleague, she's like, yeah, I see why you're reading it this way, but it actually means this. And that was like, that's unsettling because you're like, oh my gosh, I remembered it wrong. But the thing around it that was even like, that really felt so painful was like the shame of it. Like, because what I'll say is when we say that we're afraid of forgetting something, the thing I think that actually feels spiciest and sharpest about that fear is the fear of the shame that comes up when we've forgotten something. And I think that's really important to recognize and really reflect on the origins for. Right? Like, why do we have such deep, deep shame and guilt when we forget something, when we've got a fact wrong, when we misremember something someone told us? Like, why does that sit as like a deep sinking lead balloon in my gut? And I can reflect on how the way I went through my educational training, both pre-med and during med, the horrific thing that I hope still isn't called pimping that you experience, where you're just like pop quizzed on the wards and often explicitly shamed, maybe even mocked if you don't remember. Is it any surprise that we still have that story living inside of us of like, if you don't get the answer right, if you, you know, say the wrong answer on Jeopardy, basically is what it feels like, you're a failure, you're a bad clinician. Like, hopefully the way I'm saying this, I'm not saying you are those things, but like, that's what like lives inside of us. And if it simply was that we have this unpleasant sensation, I mean, that would be good enough reason to consider releasing this fear. But beyond that, like, that unpleasant sensation and the fear of feeling the shame of forgetting leads us to do a lot of things that end up taking up a lot of our brain space, a lot of our energy, a lot of our time. Like, when I feel like, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget everything, and I'm like frantically writing down every single thing they say, I'm not even listening to what the person's saying, but I'm just frantically writing it down so I don't forget, which means I'm not ingesting it, which, spoiler alert, the way to remember something is to actually listen and ingest it into your brain. So all of these things, like all of these inhuman story fears, end up totally backfiring on us, if you haven't noticed, as a theme across these many podcasts. And that one is absolutely true for this. You know, so either I'm frantically writing it out, or I'm trying to repeat it back to myself in my head. Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. I'm going to remember this. I'm going to remember that. I also do this a lot, actually, with my husband in my house. And it's based on some, I would say, more like accidental stories where there have been times where he felt hurt and disappointed because I forgot to do something that I said I would do. And so now I, well, not anymore, but like for a while then, I got so anxious about never forgetting something he asked me to do that I would be like trying to juggle it in my head or writing it down. And it actually wouldn't make it more likely that I would forget, or that I would remember. I would still potentially forget because I was just like in the moment of the anxiety and I wasn't actually considering how it would actually be helpful for me to remember to do it, or if it was even possible for me. Like maybe the answer is like, I can't remember to do that at that time. I'm going to be too distracted, or I have too much on my plate. I don't have capacity, you know? So just as a personal example as well, like the fear I had of feeling shame in response to my husband's disappointment at me forgetting led me to have more fear of me forgetting, but that did not result in me remembering more often. And you see this, and you see how also then this quality can be quite disconnecting, whether it's from your patient you're not really listening to, from your colleague you're not really listening to, from your partner or your loved one you're not really listening to, when you're so afraid of the shame you'll feel if you forget what they've said or you've forgotten what you learned. Like it really is a backfire situation. Oh my gosh. So like, I just think about all those impacts on your life, right? Like, how much of, the like overstudying you did, how much of your overcharting has to do with being afraid of forgetting? How much of you either like really ravenously sort of overconsuming like medical education stuff, or actually how much of your procrastination and avoidance of conferences and medical education events are because you don't want to even hear the information that you assume you might forget and then feel shame for after. So you avoid even trying to learn it in the first place. I'm like, that is me. Less now than in the past, but still a little bit. I'm like, and some of it's sort of wisdom of like, I think a conference just is always going to have too much information. Like my brain gets full pretty quick when I'm actually trying to sit and digest and remember something. It's really like eating food. Like I need it to be a paced buffet and over actually many days, probably at my own speed, then I will actually potentially think through and remember the information. And there's something about conferences where you just start to feel terrible for all the things you don't know. And that is very tied to the same shame thing, the shame of not knowing, the shame of not being smart enough, which is, what does smart even mean? Just knowing random facts in your brain? Like there's so many pieces of this. So do you relate? That's the first thing. Can we talk about this? Do you relate? Do you notice you have a fear of forgetting, a fear of not knowing, which really, as we've already stated, is a fear of the shame story you feel when you forget or are caught out not knowing in relationship to another person or even to yourself, right? And the thing that makes this hard, as I said at the beginning, is we forget things all the time. Like our brains are not designed to hold all of the information, especially the fire hose of information that we have are exposed to, like just in the world globally. And then even within healthcare, like the number of new like info bulletins, the number of new things, my gosh, in the pandemic, like even just keeping up with COVID-19, like the early days where things were changing a lot, like keeping up with that alone took so much attention that like other parts of medicine I had to like relearn after we all kind of came back from that intensity of that particular early pandemic times, like, because our brains can truly only hold so much, truly, you know, as well as like, even if we somehow had managed to memorize every single fact that was offered to us in medical school, well, now all the facts are different. Not all of them, but a bunch of them. Knowledge is we're never gonna know it all. We're never even gonna get exposed to it all, much less ingest it all and actually recall it all. Like, it's an inhuman story and an inhuman expectation to think that your brain can hold as much information as the entirety of Google, the entirety of UpToDate, if you use UpToDate. Like, the fact that we feel shame if we don't know something, it shows us an inhuman story, right? Because shame is always an inhuman story, because we're never a bad person for something that just makes us human. And not remembering all the things is human. It's our brains. Same with sort of task list stuff. So saying I'm gonna, do the dishes and then getting distracted and not doing the dishes is a deeply human thing. The fact that then we end up feeling shame and guilt for it is really fascinating and tragic, And so that's kind of what I want this whole podcast to help give you permission to move on from. I think it's important to really just reflect on exactly what our brains are doing. That was like, I think I having some revelations about my brain and the inhuman expectations I had of my brain really gave me permission to stop having those inhuman expectations for myself or for other people, And so I wanted to share some of the ways that I've heard people describe brains that I find the most helpful. The first one is quite like sort of short and pithy. I heard it from Cara Lowenthal, who is like a feminist coach who I've done some training with and have really enjoyed her podcast in the past. And one way I've heard her describe the brain is a bowl of jello with electricity running through it. Because as a way of just describing like the totality of our consciousness and our sense of identity, as well as everything we have ever remembered, you can't see me, but I'm like pointing, is like contained within this blob of tissue that has electrical, chemical currents running through it. And that makes up our entire life experience. It does that kind of freak you out a bit? It like I'm getting goosebumps because it's sort of like when you look up at the stars and you're like, oh my gosh, we're flying through space. We don't even know. We're infinitesimally small. Like it's that like whoa kind of awe sense. But it's a very helpful thing to ground yourself in. Not in a way where you're like, well, then who cares? Why even bother trying to remember? Because like I'm just a big blob. Like in anything, it helps us to appreciate like, oh my God, this bowl of jello with electricity running through it is like creating my entire experience of my life. Thank you, brain. Like, how cool are you? How are you doing what you're doing? Like, have you seen a brain? It is not that impressive from the outside. Sorry, brain. Like, just to look, I mean, it's just like very blobby and like a bowl of spaghetti. It's all smushed together ramen noodles. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, the way it looks is the fact that that is the organ in which our consciousness and everything we're experiencing in life, the fact that I am saying words out loud and moving my arms and you are listening and doing your walking is all because of this jello, electrical jello. Come on. That's actually a good time in my experience. And it means like maybe it makes sense that that's different than like a computer and not even just a single computer, but like all of the internet existing over zillions, I don't know, it's probably not an accurate number, but like a whole bunch of servers and knowledge deposits, like those are not equal to each other. We cannot expect even like all the information in a certain book. Like that's a static, non-dynamic repository of knowledge or information or like ideas about something, a book. Or, a website or whatever. And then there's our brains. And that our brains are not like this filing cabinet of knowledge. Like that's not even how it works. And so that's the other thing that's been really fun to even get further into like thinking about the brain and learning about my brain. And so I wanted to share, excuse me, a couple quotes from this book that I think I've read half of as a book snacker. As you know, rarely finish a nonfiction book, but the parts I've read, I go back to, I enjoy the quotes of, and I wanted to share some of them with you. So the book is called 7.5 Lessons About the Brain Shout out to Deb Malkin, who's a pain coach that I've worked with and had on the podcast a couple of times, and I love. She's the one who told me about this book. The book is written by Lisa Feldman Barrett, B-A-R-R-E-T-T. Don't try and remember that unless you want to. I'll put the link in the show notes. So little moment of just saying, oh, that's something she mentioned. Decide if you want to remember it or not, but you can always look at the show notes, okay? Speaking brain to brain. So that's the name of the book. And so it's all about these different ideas about the brain. It has a really fascinating, like the half open introduction chapter is about how, like, the classic way that we often have heard about, like, you know, our more primitive emotions come from our lizard brain, and then our very smart prefrontal cortex suppresses that. She has like a different framing of that that is kind of like, no, it's all just one brain. That's really interesting. And so if you're curious, you can read that. But I wanted to read this one part because, again, it's just sort of like putting the brain back in its proper context for each of us. And so here's the quote. From the moment you're born to the moment you draw your last breath, your brain is stuck in a dark, silent box called your skull. Day in and day out, it continually receives sense data from the outside world via your eyes, ears, nose, and other sensory organs. This data does not arrive in the form of the meaningful sights, smells, sounds, and other sensations that most of us experience. It's just a barrage of light waves, chemicals, and changes in air pressure with no inherent significance. And so then that's the end of the quote. But I mean, I just think that's something to marvel at it itself. Like the fact that we create coherence out of the absolute cacophony of sensations that, like, my skin is experiencing right now from temperature changes, my eyes are experiencing, the fact that there's these internal thought processes going on where I'm making sense of the world and therefore saying words out loud, like, it's very trippy and just incredible. And that our brains are quite skillful at creating meaning out of all of this data that is chaos until they create meaning out of it. And then it makes sense then, like, I don't know if you ever took like a neuroscience class or I think it was a psychology class where they showed, you know, things like optical illusions or whatever. The things that reveal when the brain doesn't fully accurately map because of its default meaning-making processes, it doesn't quite accurately map what it's seeing. And so you have these optical illusions or a way of seeing something two ways, like that kind of stuff. A lot of this book is talking about how the brain is doing that, like something that is a bit outside the realm of the fear of forgetting concept I'm doing now, but maybe I'll do a future episode about it. Maybe I'll have Deb on, I'll have to ask her. But like, it's really fascinating how the way that we experience our lives is technically in part what's actually happening now, but equally in part, I don't know if it's actually 50-50, but it's equally of importance in part, what our brain is predicting should be happening right now. And that's why we're able to react so quickly to something before we even, you know, you put your hand away from the stove before you even feel the pain. It's because your brain's predicting what's happening. Like it's a lot of what we experience is just our body, our brain remembering past experiences and assuming the same thing will happen again. So like we're actually kind of always experiencing a slight hallucination. That is very trippy. And I'm sorry if that's a tangent that you didn't need to go down today, but it's worth looking into because the cool thing is then it's like, oh, so if you leave your brain more open and curious and you're aware of this and know that maybe your brain is predicting something that isn't actually true. For example, if your brain predicts that you are a terrible person and a piece of garbage because you've forgotten something, because that's an old story that your brain has learned from the past, you can start to offer your brain a new story and that will change your experience and your brain will start to predict differently in the future. Is that too meta? Are you with me? I'm having a good time. I hope you are too. But like that's another feature of the brain, which is like, it's just a real feature of the brain. That's like how brains work. How cool is that? Anyways, getting us back on track for what we're talking about today, which is fear of forgetting. There's another quote in the Lisa Feldman Barrett book, The 7.5 Lessons About the Brain, that I also just thought was really fascinating to know about memory. I'm sure there are like way more facts about memory. Like someone's entire, multiple people's entire careers are about like what memory is and how it works. But I thought this particular fact, it really again helped ground me in the sort of like reality that our brains are these jello electrical things, and that sometimes we have these inhuman objectifying expectations of them. Like I often think about my memories as being stored in these little files, and then I'm like trying to retrieve the file and like, oh, why isn't it where I left it? Like, you know, I feel like that's like a joke that people can make. And I just thought it was really interesting to learn about how that's very not how memories are stored in the brain at all, and what actually happens, like how memories are actually recalled. It's sort of an aside in the book. It doesn't get into much detail, but I just think it's very fascinating. So I wanted to share a quote from that. So this is the quote. Brains of higher complexity can remember more. A brain doesn't store memories like files in a computer. It constructs them on demand with electricity and swirling chemicals. We call this process remembering, but it's really assembling. Each time you have the same memory, your brain may have assembled it with a different collection of neurons. That's the end of the quote. Isn't that fascinating? Like, it's not even from the same little area of your brain. It, the memory is being stored in some sort of collective way and then reassembled every time. Like something else that I've definitely heard in multiple places, which can have like major implications for like eyewitness testimony in court cases and stuff, is the fact that like our memories can absolutely be impacted and manipulated based on our present experience. So if we recall a memory in a different context, it colors that memory and alters that memory. And our memories are very fallible, which doesn't mean we can't trust them at all. We don't have to absolutely panic that we don't know anything about anything. But for me, what it's led to is like a softening of the rigid expectations I had for my own mind. My brain is doing an incredible job as this like blob of neuron cells and chemicals and electricity. Like, it's just so incredible that I am like coherent right now talking to you, you know, and having, it's so delightful to have all of these cool thoughts and ideas and imaginations and daydreams. And it's so cool that I remember anything about medicine actually. And so it's put me in this softening position where I'm not hard, like in a hard driving kind of way, trying to like force my brain to remember everything and yelling at my brain when she doesn't. It makes me really grateful and kind of in awe of the fact that I remember anything at all. And that's, first of all, it's just a better time. It's more relaxing over here. I'll say that. And I truly have had the experience of it helping me to remember more. Like, I'll have moments, say, with a patient and, you know, something, I'm like, oh, I'm trying to recall this condition or this medicine, and oh, it's left me. And in back in the day, it would have been like, how could I forget? Now this patient's going to think I'm an idiot and I'm an incompetent doctor and I'm such a fraud because I can't remember the simple name. And now I'm like, it's gone. It's not coming to me. What do I remember about it? Oh, I remember I think it starts with this letter. I think it's kind of close to, maybe if I like Google around, oh yeah, it's this. And sometimes it'll happen because I Google it and then I remember that that's what it is. Sometimes I don't even get to Googling it. But like when I approach it from that angle of just like, well, what do I remember about it? What do I remember? Do I have context clues? What's the vibes? Like, it actually leads me closer to remembering it, including actually just fully remembering it. And I'm like, oh, that was fun. And like, just the difference of the approaches is stark. The difference of the experiences of what I'm having in terms of feeling relaxed and curious versus very intensely, like, assuming I'm about to have to like be my own evil preceptor and shame me in front of myself for some reason, like very different experiences. And which one of those two leads to me remembering more? The relaxing one. It makes sense maybe when you say it out loud. And I'm definitely not shaming anyone. So if you feel like I'm shaming you for sort of defaulting to have that really anxious, fear-based experience, like we've talked about it. We know where it comes from. We know why it's happening. And I'm saying there's a way to shift it back, and you can practice shifting your story over time to release this fear of the shame of forgetting. And it's so freeing. It's so freeing to know when I've forgotten, nothing's gone wrong, my brain is just braining, I'm not broken. Like, I am not supposed to remember everything. That's not how this works. That's not how I operate, right? Just like we don't have to be ashamed of needing sleep and needing to eat. These are just facts about us as human beings and human bodies. So I wanted to say a bit more specifically about how you could practice stopping to be scared of forgetting. The first is when the fear arises, we don't now shame that or panic worse. We allow the fear to arise and tend to that fear and love on that past self that's rising up in us that was shamed by those preceptors and shamed by our grade school teachers for not knowing the answer or where's the other 1% or whatever places that these things come from. We love on that part of ourselves and say, I know why you're scared. I know that in the past, it's been really kind of a survival need to remember everything and to get as close to perfect as possible, but we don't have to do that. It's just us here. And like really like loving on that and like holding the hand of that very scared young part of ourselves that thinks it's not okay to forget. And then telling that young part of ourselves that we will forget. In fact, here we have forgotten something in this moment, which is why the fear arose. It's happened. The gap has existed. The memory has not reassembled fully. And we can just sort of accept that reality as being the truth. We don't have to be afraid of it because it's just literally true. It's like being afraid of weather changing. Weather happens. It's just the truth, right? And then beyond that, then when we've stepped away from that fear, we can have gratitude for the times it does arise. We can have curiosity and ask ourselves, well, what do I remember? This is a really helpful question. I try and remember to remember asking this to learners too. If they're, if I've asked them, like, so can you share a bit of what you know about this topic? I do it in like the gentlest, like non-quizzy way possible, but it is useful to know what they know, right? And so I'm like, this isn't a quiz. I'm just curious what you know. And if they're like, I don't know, it's like, well, what do you know about this generally? Like, let's just explore what you know. And often they can kind of put it together or they get close to what the thing is. And then we learn about it from there. And it's like, great. It's a good time. So it's like, this is a chance to learn. If I've forgotten something, it's a chance to learn, maybe relearn, maybe reinforce. Nothing has to have gone wrong with that, and sort of approaching it from that angle. Trusting also that wherever that learning comes from is great. So I used to get really like embarrassed and feel defensive and kind of shamey if, say, a patient remembered something and I hadn't remembered. Like the classic is they come in like, remember how I had that condition last summer? And then I would like pretend I remembered it when I have over 1,000 patients. I usually don't. Every so often I do. Some people's stories are more memorable. I was more involved. Like there's reasons why I was more emotionally attuned to that particular thing versus if something just sort of like, flew by my inbox, I might not remember, and that's okay. So now I'm more honest and being like, I'm not remembering at the moment. Can you share with me what's important to you about that or why you're sharing with me now? And let them teach me and say, thank you so much for reminding me of that. Oh, you said you were gonna get my flu shot. Thank you so much for reminding me of that. Like the idea that we have to only remember for ourselves and something's gone wrong if someone remembers for us is another inhuman shame story that really shoots us in the foot. So like just say having gratitude for when our patients remind us, when pharmacists remind us, instead of being like, oh, you make mistakes too, pharmacist. It's like, thank you for catching that one. I hadn't noticed it. Like, I have to kind of, I still process the fear or the anxiety or the embarrassment that comes up. That's okay. It makes sense. I know why that story's there in my body. And I then think, at least in my brain, and try and communicate out loud, like, thank you so much for reminding me. Because I just couldn't possibly remember all the things, all the interactions, I make mistakes, I make errors, I forget things. I am a human being in a human body, just like everybody else. There isn't a doctor or clinician walking on this earth that does not forget things, even if they're very good at hiding it. And beyond that, the other like kind of strategy, just to say, is that I really, now that I've fully accepted I will not remember it in my brain, I use my resources. I have my external brain. So I talk about, like for medicine, I use RX files, which is like a, I use the book form. There's like a PDF form and it's got lots of medication things. So I don't try and memorize all of the doses and the names of the medicine. I, over time, have just familiarized myself accidentally, like not even trying to memorize, but like I've just used them enough that I know common ones. But other ones I look up. I look up stuff all the time. I look up stuff in front of patients. My other one is UpToDate. You know, it's like a subscription service with lots of medical information behind it. I use that all the time. And then for the rest of my life, when I'm trying to like remember things I want to do, I mean, the most important thing is I don't expect myself to remember most things of what I'm doing. I really try and only protect and prioritize the things I really own as my tasks, and everything else is like optional bonus and probably not going to happen. If I have committed to doing it, it lives on my calendar. And for me, it's, that's my Google Calendar. And that, like, if it's on that calendar, I'm committed to doing it, which doesn't mean I beat myself up if I miss something, but I do reschedule it to another day. If I notice I'm rescheduling something a lot, that means I actually don't want to do it and I take it off. And so that, like, my calendar is my source of truth for tasks that I've owned, future tasks that I've owned are mine that I want to do at the time I've assigned myself to do them. By the way, my like Restoring Your Time course is kind of all about this sort of organizational time stuff. So if you're interested in more of this, you can purchase that course if you're interested. And then my other source of truth, like, are my inboxes. And I try and keep my inboxes to a minimum. So my EMR inbox obviously exists because that's got all like the private patient information. And that's like my task list for anything to do with patient stuff. So I don't try and keep a separate list of what I'm doing. Everything exists in the inbox there. And then my other main inbox is my email. So I had like a to-do app, and that was soothing for a while. And then yet it became just another source of places I would pretend to commit to something and hadn't. So like, if I've committed to it, it's on my calendar. If I do want to consider committing to it, or I want a reminder of it, I email myself that way. Cause my email was already a bunch of unclaimed work that I hadn't decided if I would or wouldn't do and when. And so I just added my own to it. So that's like, now, you know, speaking of like the panic of forgetting something Francis has asked me to do, if he's sort of like just doing a drive-by, like, oh, do you think we could remember to do that? I'll like pause and be like, how important is this to you? Is there, what timeline makes sense for you? I think I'd have capacity to do it in this timeline. And then I'll like email myself, or I'll write it on the calendar so that I actually do it. And if I don't, I'm like, you know, that day I'm not going to commit to remembering. We'll both try our best. And we know it's kind of a wish and it's a bonus if it happens. Like, we try and really get clear on like how important this is and either make the commitment to doing it or say, well, it'll be nice if we remember. And if not, it's fine. And like kind of put it in one of those two buckets, truly. And that's been a great source of lower conflict in our relationship. So great for that reason. And same with patients, you know, so patients like, can you do this, this, and this for me? I do it in that appointment with them. And if I've run out of time, space, bandwidth, energy, I say, so the rest of this, we're going to do another time. I'm not going to promise to do it for you. I'm going to do it at our next appointment. And sometimes I flow away from that boundary, but the more I stay within that boundary, the less I forget to do things, you know? And so it's still a flow. It's still a process. When patients hand me forms in the appointment, and so it's not scanned in, so it's not in my inbox, that's, I've noticed like a gap that I have to tend to. And so my process I'm working on practicing and making concrete is that sending myself a message, just so then again, that means it's an inbox item, which means that it's a task I know I'll have to do in the future, and really like trying to do something like that, you know, or trying to do it in the appointment. So there's still like little ones where I'm like, oh, I notice I'm recurrently forgetting that kind of task or that kind of fact or whatever. And is that important to me to remember? And if so, how can I support myself to do so? No need to beat myself up as a piece of that. No need to panic. It's a trend. It's a pattern I've noticed. And then I address it, you know? So that's all I have to say about fear of forgetting. The internet has crashed twice during this recording. My hope is that I can knit this together so it's seamless. and I think that's a sign, though, that I'm meant to stop recording the podcast. So I'm going to stop. Thank you so much for listening. What is one thing that you do want to remember from this podcast? And is it the fact that it's okay that you forget things? If you remember nothing else, my invitation to you, because it will feel good in your body to remember it. And my hope is it feels good and affirming and calming. So may that be the fact then that you remember. And everything else, you can listen to this again. There's like a transcript that comes up now. You can read it if you want. No problem. All right. I hope you all have a wonderful week, remembering and forgetting and remembering and forgetting. And I'll talk to you next time. I would love to take this work deeper with you. Visit joanchanmd.com today and discover my growing menu of options for restorative medical education to suit your learning needs. I offer one-on-one coaching, customized workshops, and self-study courses that allow you to connect not only with my work on a deeper level, but also with other healthcare humans just like you. So if you want to start humanizing your work in healthcare to a deeper level and do it in community with others, please visit joanchanmd.com and find those options and what fits you and your life today.